All right. Yeah. Well, today's another day. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big what book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially let me let go of all my old ideas so I can experience your new truth. Give me an open-minded spirit so I can listen to you today. God, help me carry your message today. Amen. Okay. We're passing the basket. Let's be generous. We're on family afterwards today. We're starting that. We finished to wives. We did 5 weeks on to wives, and I really got a lot out of it. It's powerful. And then studying these pages on family afterwards, they're like the principles of how we live with each other. How we live with each other, not just husbands and wives and families, but in the world and fellowship with each other. And so family afterwards, after what? After the alcoholic has given up and has begun trying to live a spiritual life, and how does the family relate? And that could be true of how you relate with all the people in your life. But there's some really good stuff in here. Our women folk have suggested certain attitudes a wife may take with the husband who is recovering. And that was the previous chapter. The attitudes are the spiritual principles by which we should live, and how we can be loving and kind and tolerant and patient, considerate, compassionate. How we can get out of self in relationships. So it says, perhaps they create the impression that he is to be wrapped in cotton wool. Is that good, I guess? And placed on a pedestal. That hasn't happened in my house. But successful readjustment means the opposite. And we shouldn't really wrap anybody in cotton wool or place anybody on a pedestal. We're all trusted servants. We're all equal. We're all trying to help each other. We all have issues. We all have personalities that need to be adjusted at time. Successful, so you're going to do a successful readjustment, which means you're going to readjust how things were before. So not only does the alcoholic have to change, but the relationships have to change, and each person is responsible for changing. All of the members, you think they meet all members of the family? I love this line. All members of the family should meet upon the common ground of tolerance, understanding, and love. And I wrote here, all of the AA family, all of the world, everyone should meet upon this. Isn't that really what the scriptures are all about? And then I see tolerance differently today than I had. I have to make amends. When I heard that thing about love and tolerance, it sounded really jazzy. You know how we repeat jazzy stuff that sounds really cool, that we love the people we can love and we tolerate the ones we can't manage the love. Well, I don't think that's true. I think we have to love everybody, loving, being merciful, practicing mercy, practicing understanding, practice consideration on everybody. Tolerance to me is I don't know if it's an engineering term, but how much friction a substance can tolerate before it melts. And to me, tolerance has to do with me and how I relate to people, not how they are. Do I allow them to disturb me so I start getting melting, I start getting upset, or do I just see it as it is? How much do I allow them to upset me? See, it has to do with me. Loving has to do with how I see them, but tolerance has to do with how I let them affect me. So if I practice tolerance, I don't have to get disturbed. And so remember, that's the key. The winners are the undisturbed. That's how you know if you're a winner in AA. How were you undisturbed less than the rest of the other person in AA? We should have an undisturbed contest, but we cheat. It would be like telling us how much we drank. You know, I was only undisturbed once. Well, we know that's not true. All right. And so understanding, you want to understand and be loving. And I wrote common ground, tolerance, understanding, and love of others. This involves a process of deflation of self. Isn't that what the whole program's about? Deflating my self-centeredness, my image, my way I do things, to seek God all the time. Deflation involves, and I think Judd mentioned, the willingness to seek the power, because my power is not there. And I'm a broken person when I come in. I thought of something, it doesn't really relate to this, but we have a big football game tomorrow. Anybody know about that, right? For those listening on the podcasts around the place, this is Chiefs country, and they've notoriously let us down. So I suggest everybody say the Serenity Prayer before the game, and especially by the fourth quarter, because my expectations are very low. Well, anyway, I had this thought that when you look at yourself and you look at your fourth step in your life, what you really are is you're on the field and you're watching you play the game of life. And when you're watching it with Tony Romo and Jim Nantz in the booth, and they're watching you, and they go, it's the fourth quarter, and they go, is Michael ever going to stop the resentment play? It's not working. Stop it. Well, let's see what he does with the next play. Oh, Jim, it's fear again. That hasn't worked either. Is he ever going to stop? It's fourth down. What's he going to do? There he goes. Self-centered action. How'd that work? Is he ever going to practice love? And to me, that's really, I don't know if it makes any sense, but we kept running the wrong plays. Why? And here's what they go. They go, you know, if he would stop calling the plays and let somebody else call him who had the power to win the game. And that's what we have to stop calling the plays, our self-centered plays, and then our life changes. And so when we meet on a common ground of tolerance, understanding, love, we don't want to run the play anymore. We want somebody else to run it. Now, if we're on that common ground, then we have God. We're with God, right? But if we're not on the common ground, somebody is not with God. And it's hard to have a relationship with people who are spiritually ill. So then we have to learn how to deal with that. And they talk about that in the next pages, and they talked about in the previous chapter. I love this one. The alcoholic, his wife, his children, his in-laws, here's the whole world, everybody in AA. Each one is likely to have fixed ideas. We all have fixed ideas about the family's attitude towards himself or herself. In other words, we all have a fixed idea about how they're supposed to treat me and how they're supposed to be. Is that called an expectation? Mm-hmm. And then they don't meet it, we get all upset. But whose fixed ideas were it? I said something the other day, not have an opinion. My friend Bruce talked to me about it from Minnesota. What I meant is, we don't have to have fixed ideas about how things should be. We should be open-minded, willing to communicate. We don't have to take a stand to defend my fixed ideas. Maybe they're wrong. I don't know if that makes any sense. Each is interested in having his or her wishes respected. We want to be respected. Why? Because if we don't think we're respected, we get what? Hateful. Yeah, we don't get just mad, we get hateful. But really, I put, we want his or her wishes followed. We want them to follow my wishes and do what I want. We find them, this is the whole deal, just in these four lines. We find the more one member of the family demands that the others concede to him, the more resentful they become. Isn't that page 60, 61? we start the ball rolling, they retaliate. But didn't we set it in motion? See, their reaction, they're retaliating because we are demanding more. And they become resentful at us. So you're not, when that happens, you're not meeting upon a common ground of tolerance, understanding of love. This makes for discord and happiness. So if you're in a relationship that's not going well, you could just look at this paragraph and say, what's going on? Now, I find that the one thing that helps me is when I change my view of the other person, it helps me. I don't have to get disturbed, and I can be loving and kind if I change the way I see them. They may not change at all. And so I don't expect them to change, but I want to be capable of changing so they don't disturb me, and maybe I can be loving and kind to them. Isn't that what page 66 and 67 is all about? How can I be love, patient, and kind and tolerant? God save me from being angry. And when I do that, I feel better. And over time, they change too, because it works both ways. And so I heard a lot of people come in, they have 3 weeks, and they're wondering why everybody at home is still upset with them. Or, you know, they get their 30 days, and you know, nothing's changed at home. Well, we were the tornado, remember, coming up from the cellar, and it's not going to change. And those 82 and 83 really help, if you haven't studied those pages, how we have to make living amends, how we have to change. They have to see us change. So why do we have discourse and unhappiness? Well, here it is. This is page 60 to 62. Is it not because each wants to play the lead? So everybody wants to be the manager instead of the actor. Is not each trying to arrange the family show to his liking? Is he not unconsciously, I put consciously at times, trying to see what he could take from the family life rather than get what he wants? So this is the self-centered person. So the self-centered person in a family relationship is never going to be happy with the way they are. So they're going to have to change. They're going to have to change from self-centered to God-centered and see it differently. So these two paragraphs talk about what's my perspective in a relationship. What am I bringing in? And we talked about that last week. It said that those page 118, I don't think I can read these lines enough. It says, patience, tolerance, and understanding and love are the watchwords. Show him these things in yourself, and they will be reflected back to you from him. I mean, that's the key. If I bring patience, tolerance, and love and understanding, it'll get reflected back. If I bring hateful self-centeredness, judgment, and tolerance, I get it back. Live and let live is the rule. And it's if both of you show willingness to remedy your own defects, not theirs, there will be little need to criticize each other. So I think this all ties together. I mean, it's basically how you work the steps, each person, to change the way you react. Remember, when we react in fit spiritual condition, we're not in conflict with who? Everybody and everything. If we're not in fit spiritual condition, we get in conflict with everybody and everything. Which works better for you? Cessation of drinking is but the first step away from a highly strained abnormal condition. Cessation from drinking doesn't change anything. It just means the alcoholic's sober. So he doesn't have a spiritual remedy anymore for his spiritual disease. So things may get worse when the person stops drinking because they're sober all the time. Remember, son of a bitch, everything's real. And unless they're seeking God and seeking a relationship with God and trying to have a spiritual life, they're just left with untreated alcoholism. That can be pretty unpleasant, not only for you, but the people around you. A doctor said to us, years of living with an alcoholic is sure to make any wife or child neurotic. Neurotic means abnormally sensitive or anxious. I think that's true. People you worked with, we made them neurotic around us, anxious. They never knew how we were going to be in our relationship. So when people sober up, they're always afraid of seeing the family, you know, and the holidays, you know, how's the family going to be? Well, they're more worried about you and how you're going to be because of the way you've been. And so it works both ways. The entire family is to some extent ill. All of us. We're all God's kids. We're all spiritually ill to some extent. We all have our self-centeredness. We have to have love, tolerance for each other and understand that. Let families realize as they start their journey that all will not be fair weather. Yeah, remember, just being sober is not enough. It says that somewhere in the big book. I can't remember. Each in his turn may be foot sore. That means you get tired from the struggle and may straggle. There will be alluring shortcuts and bypaths down which they may wander and lose their way. Isn't that true if people come to AA? You start working with them and they find alluring shortcuts. Now, who tells alluring is powerful or mysterious, attractive? And who says it's powerful and mysteriously attractive? I do. And then I decide, well, you know, I don't need the 12 steps or 8 steps, and I don't need the meeting, and blah, blah, blah. Shortcuts. Don't we read every meeting? Shortcuts avail us nothing. It says, thoroughly follow their path. Do you think they really mean that? Yes, because if you don't do it, you don't have what they had. So, and bypass that which they may wander and lose their way. Isn't that true? Isn't that what really happens to people? People don't go out and, quote, relapse. People take alluring shortcuts and bypass and wander and they lose their way. And they're back and they lose their way from what? This way, and they're in their way. And when I'm in my way, I'm in deep doo-doo. Because my way got me here. I don't think when you come here and it's your first day, we really want to hear your plan for life. You know, it's not something. But, you know, new people will come in and they'll start blabbering away and tell us their plan. And I said, are they ever going to stop talking? Oh, my God. But, you know, they're trying. But, you know, they mean it. But we don't. My path was a mess. All I knew was I didn't want to follow it anymore when I came there. That was my willingness. I didn't want to follow my path anymore. I didn't want to call the plays in the fourth quarter. I didn't want to live that way. Now, I didn't understand all that was wrong with me. I didn't come in the first meeting and say I'm self-centered and I'm living on fear and anger and shame and guilt and I'm trying to run. You know, I didn't know any of that. I just knew that I was a mess. And I had an inkling that maybe I was the problem. Did anybody have like a vague sense? It's like Jim, he had a vague sense that it wasn't a good idea to take whiskey with milk. I had this vague idea that maybe it was me and not them. Anybody else have that? Because we knew deep down we were the root of our problem. Suppose we tell you some of the obstacles we meet. These are the obstacles that you can meet in any relationship. The family of an alcoholic longs for the return of happiness and security. Now, happiness means expectations, right? Of what they think will make them happy. So right away, they're getting into their expectations of what you're going to do for them, and then that can be troublesome, right? Because that's how resentments come. They remember when Father was romantic, thoughtful, and successful. Today's life is measured against that of other years, and when it falls short, the family may be unhappy. And why are they unhappy? They're not getting what they think they want. So you see how it works for, quote, the non-alcoholic? They have the same disease we have. They have the same self-centeredness and spiritual malady that we have. Family confidence in dad is rising high. The good old days will soon be back. Another thing that's changed a lot is that because of the drugs and the situation, we don't see as many families anymore when we see younger people and new people. The relationships have kind of been really distorted. And so it's different than it was in 1939. But we certainly have a way that they can repair those relationships and get back to being a useful life and be able to have relationships and make amends. I love this. Sometimes they demand, notice the word demand, that dad bring them back instantly. See, they're demanding what they want. So then they're setting up resentment to be critical of you. And I think that's one of the hardest things for myself and people I work with is the first few years, getting along, getting in relationships. You're trying to change and they just see things their way. And it makes it very hard. God, they believe, this is great, almost owes this recompense on a long overdue account. So now they're putting God on the spot. God, you better fix my life now. I've suffered. But the head of the house has spent years in pulling down the structures of business, romance, friendship, and health. These things are now ruined or damaged. It's true. It will take time to clear away the wreck. Isn't that page 82? The alcoholic is a tornado. It's like a tornado, a man coming out of the cellar, and the tornado is saying, isn't everything grand? Nothing's wrong? And meanwhile, he's left all this devastation. Read page 82. Well, why not? Let's go to 82. Is that okay, Jimmy? 82. 82. The alcoholic is like a tornado, roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderable habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. There you go. Yeah, it's sobriety just means you're not drinking. But look what you've done. He's like the farmer who came up out of a cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand, the wind stopped blowing. And then I'm going to read this line, the next paragraph, in honor of my buddy Brian. You like this paragraph, don't you, Brian?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. And to wives and the family afterwards, talk about how you can do that reconstruction, how it can be helped by spiritual principles. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling remorsefully, that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. Remember, the 8-9 isn't about saying you're sorry, it's about making amends. We hope you're sorry, and you can see the shame and guilt, and that's why you want to make the amend. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, and I wrote to whom? See, we still think they're glaring, but they may not be. Do the four-step. But the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. They have a sense of humor here. So we clean house with the family. And here's what I do each morning. I do this. Each morning in meditation, I ask my Creator to show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Not to show me patience, kindness, tolerance, but what's the way I do that? How do I have to be so I can be patient, tolerant? I have to be centered on Him, centered on God. That's the way I get through God. And then I can be patient, tolerant, kind. And then there's a subtle line in here. The spiritual life is not a theory. And then there's squiggly writing. We have to live it. Talking about it won't do any good. Reading this chapter we're doing now, but hopefully if I take some of this information home today, and I practice this in my relationships, that things will improve for me in terms of how I react and how I serve God and others. It will take time to clear away the wreck, which we just read, Rebecca 123 again. Though old buildings will eventually be replaced by finer ones, the new structures will take years to complete. I remember in my practice, the patient would come in the wheelchair. They'd lost 80 pounds. They couldn't walk. They were really sick. And in some of these cases, we had very effective treatment that could help them. So I'd say, well, we need to get started because things are really bad. Because you know me, I've got issues. I want to do everything right away, get things going. So drove everybody crazy in the office, but they were used to me. And so anyway, we'll get started. We'll get the things in. We'll start tomorrow. So we give them the first treatment, and then they come in for follow-up a few days later. and they want to know why they're not out of the wheelchair yet. I said, well, it took months to get here. It's going to take a while. Give it time. Be patient. And that's true of us, isn't it? It takes a while for us to destroy all of our relationships and bring all this crap down on us. It's going to take a while to get our lives straightened out. Right? But the first thing I have to do is be spiritually fit, connected to God, working the steps. Then the job, the car, the relationship, those other things, family, they'll come back. But we have to do first things first, right? We have to first seek the kingdom. That comes from scripture, but seek ye first the kingdom. Seek your relationship with God, and then everything follows. We don't come here, it doesn't say, we read that work, we don't come here to get the new car and then work the steps, right? Yeah, that's not the AA program. Father knows he is the blame. How does Father know he's the blame? Step four. But here's the problem with some of this. Father knows he's the blame, but the person who's seeing Father's the blame, did they have any role in this either? See what I mean? We all have a part in our resentments. We all have a part in our judgment, right? Now, maybe we didn't have any part, but what could I have done differently? What do I have to change in my personality? How it may take him many seasons of hard work to be restored financially, but he shouldn't be reproached. Yeah, I like that. I'm going to read that at home. Perhaps he will never have much money again, but the wise family will admire him for what he is trying to be rather than what he is trying to get. Now, that's a powerful line. What are we trying to be today? What are you trying to be today? Or what are you trying to get? Are you trying to be good so you'll get something from somebody else? Or are you trying to be the person God created so you can get serve them? You see, what are your motives? And you might ask yourself that. What are you trying to be rather than what you're trying to get? And isn't that the St. Francis prayer? Being a channel of God's peace, which you're going to bring in. Remember, it's by self-forgetting that one finds. It's by forgiving that one is forgiven. You want to comfort rather than be comforted. You want to understand rather than stood. Isn't that the whole St. Francis prayer? What am I trying to be rather than what I'm trying to get? And if I'm trying to get something and it's self-directed, then I'm going to be all those, on page 61, I'm going to have all those qualities to get what I want, right? So if I'm God-centered, then I want to be the person God created, and what I want to get is God's will for me and for others. I'll just read a couple lines. Now and then the family will be plagued by specters from the past, for the drinking career of almost every alcoholic has been marked by escapades, funny, humiliating, shameful, or tragic. Is that true? Yes. Now here's what I wrote. What about sober? Did you do anything sober that was a mess? See, a lot of people come in here and they don't understand the first step. They think it's their lives were unmanageable after they drank. Well, that may be certainly true. But my life was unmanageable sober. And that's why I couldn't keep from the obsession to drink. I think I'll stop there. Remind me where we are next time. We only covered a couple pages, but I blabbered a lot. But I hope it was helpful. Thank you.